of the allegations before the interview. That provides the commission with a basis then to decide whether or not something's gone awry with the investigation itself. So that's the sentence I would propose, Chief.
Okay, and I would agree with that. Is there any other discussion in amending this language to reflect Justice Hardesty's introductory sentence?
Just that my intended opposition is shifting to a support based upon the conversation and amendment, that's all.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, is there a motion to approve the recommendation?
I'll make the motion.
Okay, is it second?
Well, is the motion to approve the recommendation as amended by Justice Hardesty?
Yes. Yes, that is the motion.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Very good. All right, page 14, rule 18.1. Kevin?
Well, we might, I don't know, maybe the next two could be taken together because it's actually an amendment to the same paragraph. So if you want to, with your, where your permission,
okay.
Justice.
Yeah, so it's page 15.
I just noticed it's actually two amendments to the same paragraph.
Yeah.
The amendments would be that the hearing should be scheduled at a time mutually agreed to and by the parties, and that there has been some, you know, some judges indicate that that hasn't happened in their case, like for the availability of witnesses. And then the second sentence would be that the proper venue for judicial proceedings would be the jurisdiction where the alleged misconduct occurred.
Okay, so we're going right to page 15, and that includes everything on that rule, 18.1.
That would be all the proposed amendments to rule 18.
Okay, so we're looking at page 15 and the highlighted language there that Kevin just read. Do we have discussion?
Justice Perigary, it's Hardy. I like the theme of these two rules, and I want the commission to be more responsive to the concerns of the judges. I just continue to have a problem with the prescriptive mandatory language. In the past, there have been some delays that are attributable to people outside of the commission. And when we give to a litigant the unfettered equal veto right of time, then we lose the ability to manage our cases in the most expeditious way possible. So thematically, I want to support this idea, but I would prefer a little less mandatory language and more aspirational language.
Well, what about adding, giving the parties the opportunity to mutually agree upon a time? That doesn't restrict you in any way. Allows you to carry on, but it gives the other party an opportunity to participate in the scheduling. How's that?
Yeah, I love it. You know, what I'm hearing as a commissioner is that we absolutely want to work with counsel and judges as to convenient times and even convenient venues. I am unaware of any objection to that. And so that type of language, both for this rule and the next rule, would be wonderful.
Okay.
For me, this certainly isn't written in stone, and I'm amenable to any amendment. It's just we have heard from judges who felt they were at a disadvantage because they had people they wanted to appear who were unable to appear at the time they had no choice in picking, or there were hearings. I know there's an issue, north-south hearings, but we heard complaints about it. You know, judges in one end of the state couldn't get all their witnesses to the other end of the state. It was inconvenient for their witnesses to appear. Perhaps some of that, I think there's a rule appear later on allowing for video testimony as appropriate, but
so
that's
Kevin,
what we're trying to fix.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, Kevin.
Okay.
I want to honor and validate those concerns that you have heard. I have no reason to push back against whether those concerns exist or have been presented. But I also hear from my side explanations for when those judges feel aggrieved, and then we just get into this kind of battle of you know, who's right and who's not. And I just want to, again, say thematically, 100%, let's move toward that type of cooperation.
Well, and maybe it's the commission shall consider the time mutually agreed to the parties. And I, at the end of the day, somebody has to make the decision. I understand that. But
well, if I could weigh in, Chief.
Sure.
The commission is not an adversary. They're adjudicating this. I know that it's viewed differently by judges, but at the end of the day, they're no different than a court hearing these matters. I think that aspirationally, the parties will set a hearing reasonably within the convenience of the parties. The venue, I think, is probably a shall, unless good cause can be shown to change the venue. Those, to me, are two different issues. But I think it's risky business to expect some judge who is not only got a lot of misconduct allegations against them to be overly cooperating and responsible in setting a hearing where their future is going to be decided. I think the commission's got to set that. I mean, I don't know. I'll turn to Keith, but I can't imagine any board or commission that's making disciplinary decisions is going to have its schedule dictated by somebody who's the subject of the investigation. That doesn't make sense to me. It'd be like the Supreme Court saying, well, we're going to hold oral argument. No, you're not. You'll hold oral argument when we're ready to hold oral argument. No, that's not going to happen. We got to be mindful here that there is an obligation to be responsive and supervise these matters and get them done with reasonable dispatch. But I can see the venue question. I think I haven't heard a good argument against holding the hearing in the venue in which the allegations occurred. And by the way, with respect to video, I fully support that. We are doing that across the board. I'll just jump to that point very quickly. We canvassed over 600 lawyers in Washoe, in Clark County. We had probably a 45% turnout in the rurals and in Washoe County. And there was an overwhelming response in favor of allowing witnesses to testify virtually in trials. Admittedly, we did not include in the survey the judicial discipline process or testimony, but I don't see why we treat it any differently. And I expect the Supreme Court's going to receive the recommendations of the Virtual Hearing Commission report that will be recommending the use of those video processes for hearing witnesses. So, as a presumptive measure in court proceedings. So, in any event, my view is I don't know that you even need to tinker with the first sentence. I think venue, I think I support that sentence just from my own perspective. Unless cause shows otherwise. We change venue in very limited circumstances in criminal cases, but it's pretty darn rare. So my motion, Chief, would be to approve the second sentence, but not the first.
Okay, is there any discussion on that aspect?
We could take the two sentences separately and vote on them separately.
Yeah, we could do that.
And I just want to
if we do, that. I'd like a roll call.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Go ahead.
As we vote, I just want to confirm what we're voting on, because with Justice Hardesty's suggestion that there be a cause determination on venue, I think that's great. I don't see it in the language itself, and so I would want to know what that.
Yeah, I was going to, Judge, that's a good point. I was going to say, absent a cause for a different venue or absent cause shown for a different venue, the proper venue for judicial hearings and proceedings shall be the jurisdiction where the alleged misconduct occurred.
Also, I just wanted to comment on the first sentence. Where that idea came from was many conversations with Bill Terry before he passed away, and that it wouldn't matter if he had a murder trial going. This is the time and date of the hearing. Too bad, you better figure it out. So that's where that came from. And I understand Justice Hardesty's point to why would you let the aggrieved dictate the time and the place for the hearing? But it should be professional courtesy between the parties and set a date and a time that works for the attorneys involved, the parties involved, and
Paul has in the past motions for continuances been sought by parties to extend the date of a hearing. I can't imagine judges sitting on this commission and insisting someone would go to a hearing when their lawyer's got a murder case they have to handle on the same date.
We always, Justice Hardesty, we do our best to accommodate all parties, and we have done so. And but as you said earlier, there comes a time where you have to have the trial, and there's a lot of delays, and we just, you know, we have prosecuting offices, and we have witnesses. It's and seven commissioners that are judges. They have their own case. It's like I've said in past meetings, it's like herding cats trying to schedule a trial. But we do our best in scheduling them. But what we find is later on, after a month, 6 weeks, 2 months, they want to change the trial when everything's been set. And in the commission's opinion, they've done so for inappropriate reasons to delay. So that is, I mean, it's difficult, and I understand everybody has schedules and things going on, but we have tried to accommodate those schedules as best we can. But it's, at some point we have to say the trial has to occur, or we're going to be waiting a year or two just to have a trial.
Paul, do you have a rule that allows for a motion for a continuance and on cause shown?
I don't believe there's a specific rule on that, but it's, you know, the rules of civil procedure after formal charges are filed apply. So they can certainly file a motion for continuance under the rules of civil procedure. So
that's what I thought. Okay.
This is Mark Denton. I'm looking at 18.1, and it says replace, and then it quotes the language. And it appears to me that the concept of what's already there is good. If I'm looking at the right one, the respondent and all counsel must be notified at the time and place of hearing, et cetera. And I'm just wondering where it says where possible, maybe the word possible could be deleted and in its place reasonably practicable or something like that. Possible seems to me to be maybe pretty strict, but maybe to say reasonably practicable, and just, in other words, leave the rest of the language the way it is and just change that word. And that gives sort of a standard as to what's reasonably practicable in terms of considering the scheduling. The way it's phrased already, it seems to me, it already takes care of the concerns. It shows that the commission is going to take these things into account. And it says where possible. And I'm just thinking that maybe just change the language to reasonably practicable. And that would be, the commission has discretion in setting its hearings. The commission is a court. It doesn't have to, as Justice Hardesty said, it doesn't have to agree with a party as to when it's going to be scheduled, right? Things are scheduled in my court all the time, not by mutual agreement, but by calendaring, proper calendaring. So anyway, that's just my statement.
Any comments? So unless we can come up with some language, and Mark just offered something. Does anybody have any comments on Mark's suggested language? And the other proposal would be to take that sentence out altogether. We'll vote these up separately on venue. Nope, no suggestions, no further suggestions. Does anybody have an inclination? Is there, or should we just call for the vote? Okay, Jim, would you want to make a motion on your proposal regarding scheduling?
Well, I don't have one. I appreciated Judge Denton's remark, but I don't see any point in changing the language of item five. So I don't have a motion to make. I don't know that there's a material difference between where possible and where practical. So I would just leave the sentence alone. So it would be up to somebody else if they want to make a motion on that one.
Yeah, I was just trying to accommodate the concern with the language. I think the way it stands now is fine.
That's, I do too.
That was the point that I was trying to make. If somebody thinks it's too strict, I was just suggesting possibly to use that term. To change that a bit, but as far as I'm concerned, it's already a fine the way it is.
Kevin, you had your hand up?
Well, maybe we just say the commission shall consider the recommendations of the parties in scheduling the hearing. You got to consider them, doesn't mean you have to accept them.
Well, you're just talking about the timing now, Judge?
Yes. Yes. Well, I am a court, and I set stuff all the time. I'm in Reno Justice Court. I'm in Elko. We're constantly changing the calendar to accommodate everybody. We don't operate by fiat, at least in this court. So I think at the least, we could consider the availability and recommendation of the parties when scheduling the hearing. And if that's we want a hearing in 7 years, well, of course, we're not going to do it.
So, Kevin, let me ask Judge Higgins, doesn't the language on page 14, right, it says the sentence that says replace and then the quote, doesn't that already require a consideration or a consultation with counsel and a consideration not only of the schedules of respondent and counsel, but their witnesses?
We were waiting for somebody to make a suggestion, so I did. This is not my hill to die on today on this sentence. So that was my suggestion. And if I hear from judges to say, I have a witness coming from somewhere and they can't be here until March. And the commission said, too bad. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what was inferred to me.
Well, the rules of civil procedure do apply. So depositions can be taken. Hopefully we'll get to the next rule where testimony can be taken live virtually. I don't know. I think those are the example that Ann mentioned earlier. If counsel has a murder trial, I can't imagine the commission wouldn't take that into account. And if they didn't, there should be a motion filed. And frankly, if the commission rejected the motion, that might be another reason for another extraordinary writ.
And the problem, of course, being that that's the only relief. There's no relief in district court anymore. We do have to go to the Supreme Court.
So. Yeah, well, the Supreme Court hasn't been bashful about granting writs on occasion.
That's true.
Even against the commission. So,
okay.
Not there anymore, but well, I don't see the need for the change.
Unless one of my lower court colleagues wants to jump in or any colleague wants to jump in and fight the good fight on that, I would just suggest that we delete that proposal on page 14 and move on. I don't think we're going to come to a consensus.
Sounds like a motion to me. Is there a second? Unless, oh, Bert, you just popped up. You're muted.
I'm agreeing. Let's just skip this one and move on.
All right.
So I move to delete the proposal on page 14 on scheduling hearings.
Okay, is there a second?
Sure, I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Okay.
And Chief, maybe if I could make a motion on this next one, and maybe people say I'm crazy, but I'll give it a try.
Okay.
Unless good cause is shown, I'll amend that second sentence. Unless good cause is shown, proper venue for the judicial hearings will be, et cetera. Move to amend and approve it as amended.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay, great, thanks. Page 16, rule 26.
Well, we might be back to the same argument we had with that other sentence, but this proposal is, the commission shall inquire of each party how much time will be required to present their case. Each party shall be allotted the amount of time that was requested to present their case. Perhaps that second sentence needs to be amended to the reasonable amount of time to present their case. I've heard complaints that people were told, you know, we've got a day's worth of defense witnesses, and they were told you've got 3 hours. So I don't know if that's true again or not, but there has to be at least some way for people to put their full case on. So that's the reason for that proposal.
Well, part of the problem. Let me ask Judge Denton. He's probably one of the longest serving commissioners, certainly on this. Do you set time limits for case presentation?
Paul, I don't recall specific time limits, unless I think there have been times when they've been set, given the calendar of the commission and the number of items that it may have on calendar. But I don't specifically recall doing that in any recent case.
When the commission reaches out and to determine when the trial is going to be, we also need to determine how long the trial is going to be. So there's a discussion on the amount of time that the special counsel needs and defense counsel. That includes witnesses and cross-exam. So we can get a venue in place, and we can also set the trial based upon availability of witnesses and commissioners, et cetera. If it's, for example, a three-day trial, then the amount of time generally just split in half, and judges counsel and the special counsel for the commission, they get a certain number of hours and use it as you wish. And you get some more time for opening and closing arguments, et cetera. And that is all laid out in our pre-hearing orders that go out months before the trial. And again, a copy of our pre-hearing order, which contains this information, has been submitted as an exhibit in prior meetings.
So I think that's part of the issue, is maybe it's perceived as being fair to give each side an equal amount of time, but the case that's presented by the special counsel might be relatively brief, but the defense has a number of witnesses they want to call. And because the prosecution says, we only need 3 hours, great, we'll give the defense 3 hours. I sat through Judge Tobiasen's hearing at UNLV, and each side was allocated the same amount of time, which really wasn't fair, because there were witnesses that Judge Tobiasen wanted to present that she was not able to because there wasn't enough time. So it might seem like it's equitable to divide it equally, but it's not.
It's not always split in half. It's based upon the proportionality of the case and rules of evidence. You know, they can file motions in limine. Again, the rules of civil procedure, rules of evidence apply during trials. And just like the amendments to the rules of civil procedure, the proportionality of the case is important. And, you know, if it's it's a rather simple issue and it shouldn't take more than 2 days and they're requesting 2 weeks, that would not be appropriate. And that has actually happened with the commission in the past, where a 2 week trial was requested when three days was sufficient. And again, they filed motions in limine. The commission decided those after motions and oppositions, replies, et cetera, based upon, again, the proportionality of the case and rules of evidence, just like any other court in the state.
Paul, does the commission hear in one proceeding both the issues surrounding misconduct as well as the judge's arguments in mitigation, or and determine discipline in the same trial? Because my concern is if they're not bifurcating the issues and the facts and the law surrounding acts of misconduct from arguments in mitigation about what discipline should be imposed, that seems problematic to me. Because I don't know, it would be difficult for a judge. I would think a judge would need more time to offer reasons why they shouldn't be, for example, barred from ever being a judge again, as opposed to a 1 year or a 6 month suspension with judicial college education. And the testimony in the case might be more focused, or as much focused on that as it is on whether misconduct occurred. That's all in one proceeding, isn't it?
Well, yes, the, you know, evidence of mitigation will come out during the trial. There's also a closing argument. So judges' counsel will typically use that time to go into mitigating evidence. And then also the commission has the ability to issue, to allow counsel to submit post-trial briefs that go into those issues, so if they want. And so that typically occurs. And but you're right, it is, you know, the commission will determine, not in a separate proceeding, but once the evidence they've decided, while they're deliberating, they decide, okay, misconduct has occurred. Then they go into the disciplinary phase of the judicial, during the deliberations. And then they decide what the appropriate discipline is. But of course, they do take into consideration any post-trial briefs that are submitted on that topic. And of course, the evidence that was gathered during the trial and closing argument.
Well, the reason I brought that up is that in bar disciplinary proceedings, there's not a lot of time spent on misappropriations from a trust account as there might be spent on whether or not the conduct should result in a 6 month suspension, a 4 year suspension, or a disbarment, as an example. And I don't know if that is the case in judicial misconduct trials, but I could see where it could be. Mm-hmm. And it may be an easy case for the prosecution to present in terms of whether misconduct occurred, easier. And the judge is going to be spending amount of time rebutting that to a limited degree, but focusing a lot on, I behaved badly in court on this particular day because, and the because ends up 4 or 5 witnesses long, which makes the trial not an even amount of time. It's definitely different. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know how one accounts for that in the scheduling order that's prepared, but not all cases are an even division between the presentment of the facts supporting misconduct and the evaluation of the facts that warrant discipline. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I guess the thing that's concerning to me is a person's professional career is on the line. I would be concerned that their career, their reputation, their livelihood, their stake would be limited by any time constraint. I know the issues you're talking about. You've got lots of people to schedule. It's difficult to find places. But boy.
So I'd like to respond. Oh, excuse me, Judge Rex, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge, and I'll proceed after you. Who was that? Hardy. Okay, sorry.
So I'm on the commission now slightly more than 2 years. I have not yet participated on any evidentiary hearing. And I previously voted against bifurcation for probable cause versus adjudication, but I support what Justice Hardesty has said and would like to go back to the commission to examine this because, again, I don't know what the history is, having never presided over or been part of one of these cases. But in my criminal practice, the difference between defending the charge versus mitigating the sentence is critical. And I would want to think about this, get the experience and wisdom of my fellow commissioners, but I fully support some recommendation that would invite us to bifurcate misconduct or not versus appropriate response.
Maybe that should be the recommendation, Judge, because as with some other things we've been talking about, not all cases are the same. But, you know, I've seen some cases come out of the commission, which I absolutely agreed with. But the focus of the party's debate in front of us had to do with whether it should be barred from practice or barred from holding a judicial office as opposed to, you know, further education or judges who are impaired, whether it be for a limited period of time or a more lengthy period of time. And a lot of facts. We all know this. A lot of different circumstances.
So what I don't know, Justice Hardesty and others, is really Paul's experience longitudinally with how presentations are kind of blended together. I'd want to learn more from the commissioners who've been involved, and maybe there's an opportunity to create a process for a subsequent punishment proceeding, or discipline, excuse me, proceeding, but not requiring it. Judge Riggs, I've talked enough. Go ahead. I'd like to hear from whatever you have to say.
Thank you. I wanted to indicate that I thought that Judge Higgins' suggested amendment pretty much captures everyone's concerns because it's because if you're indicating that each party should be given a reasonable time or the judge shall be allotted a reasonable amount of time to present their case, the second sentence, then you know, the commission still has the discretion on how long to set the hearing for, but at least if the judge does not agree, they can put that in the record, and then at least they can have a basis to write their writ if they need to. And then if they don't think that they had a reasonable time to present their case, they have something that they can argue to the Supreme Court.
So Judge Riggs, I'm not pushing back. I'm trying to collaborate on this because if I'm a judge and I've been accused of misconduct, I want to know whether the commission has found my conduct to be impermissible under the code before I start presenting mitigation evidence. It's all, and this was why I want to go back to the commission, because is there a possibility that the commission makes a finding as to misconduct or not, no misconduct, and then give the judge who is determined to be susceptible to discipline, give that judge additional time to prepare the mitigation discipline defense. I see the defense as being different. And so just giving them time to consult on the length doesn't account for the different content of the two presentations.
If I could say something. So when the commission, and this is by statute, when the commission makes a determination that formal charges should be filed and that evidentiary threshold in the commission's opinion is passed, that is clear and convincing, there's reasonable probability of clear and convincing evidence, then a determination, it's a written determination that is prepared by the commission, and that is sent to the judge, notifying the judge that formal charges have have been authorized to be filed, and we give the judge the name of the special counsel that'll be representing the commission, etc. So the judge does have that information, and I just wanted to bring that.
But if there is a document,
so they know at that time that the commission has decided that clear and convincing evidence, reasonable probability of clear and convincing evidence has occurred, thereby justifying formal charges and moving forward.
Okay, so I'm the judge and I receive that information and I choose to contest and disprove the formal charges. What I'm going to say to the commission to disprove or to challenge the commission's ability to make the finding is entirely different than what I might say in mitigation after that finding's been made. Tammy, you're one of the, your criminal defense work overshadows me. I mean, I wanted to see your mind turning on this.
And I think Judge Zimmerman's concern happens even before that, Judge Hardy, before the actual determination has been made. I mean, I think that the problem that she's trying to address is that, that you haven't had an opportunity to defend, a proper opportunity to defend in the first place. Is that so? I think we're all on the same page, right?
Yes.
Is that what you, and so Anne, I don't mean to speak for you, go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with what you're saying.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh. Can I just add one thing? The on this issue, the judge has an opportunity to say what he or she wants to say during the investigation. There's an opportunity to respond, which is a formal process under the law, to respond to the complaint. So, in the commission's opinion, they have more than enough of opportunity to get their side out during the investigation, during the response to the complaint, which is done confidentially. And I am unaware, and Professor Fisher, perhaps you know, but I am unaware of any commission in the country that goes the extra step after they've decided that a case should go to formal charges, that the judge has yet another opportunity to challenge those charges before it goes to formal charges. I'm unaware of any commission, but if there are commissions that do that, certainly it's going to delay the process even more.
Hey, I'm sorry. Yes, Paul, I just want to make sure again that we're all talking about the same thing here. This is during the actual public evidentiary portion of the proceedings, correct? This is after the commission has made their finding that, substantial evidence of misconduct has occurred, and now we're in the formal process, and it's the actual trial, right? This is what this Rule 26 addresses. So I think we're talking about giving the judge enough time to present their formal case, which, by the way, is the case to the public, right? Because this is the public proceeding.
Yes, that's the public trial is the public phase of the discipline process.
And that's the process that determines whether they're going to lose their job or not. I agree with you that nobody should be given an unlimited amount of time to present their case or to try to impede the process or insert delay into the proceedings. But as Justice Hardesty indicated, you're fighting for your job and career and, you know, being able to actually support yourself and your family for the future. It doesn't seem unreasonable to include that you should be given a reasonable amount of time to present your case. I guess I'm not understanding what the controversy is in that.
Well, what I heard was, and I forget who proposed it, but what I heard was a plan to, after the judge, after the commission determined that clear and convincing evidence of probability of that occurred prior to formal charges, that the judge is going to get yet another bite at the apple before the public phase. Now, if I misunderstood that, I apologize. But if that's not the case, then we can move on. As far as the public trial is concerned, as I said, we discuss the amount of time that is needed with counsel. So they have to decide, look, if I need five cases on the mitigation, then you have to include that in the case. And if the commission makes a decision that, you know what, we're not going to give you 2 weeks, we're going to give you 5 days, then they have an opportunity, as all judges do under the rules of civil procedure, to file motions to request more time. And the commission will meet as a whole and decide, okay, is that proportional to the case based upon evidentiary rules? Is that necessary under the circumstances of this case? And they'll issue an order to that effect. So that's no different than any other court in the state when someone wants to provide, you know, we had a case, I'm not going to say who, but they wanted to close the whole eighth judicial district court down, and they were going to call every single judge to testify on the judge's behalf. I think we can all agree that was not proportional to the case, especially since the evidence was just duplicative of what everyone else was going to say. So I just bring that up as an example, because it's up to the commission to decide, okay, it's necessary. And if the judge needs more time for mitigation evidence and it's justified, then that is what is going to happen. It's not just up to the special counsel to say, well, I have a day's evidence, so that means the defense counsel is going to have a day. That never happens. We have a discussion as to how much time is needed. And then that decision is made and put in our pre-hearing order months before the trial. That way the commission can plan on venues and witness attendance, et cetera. But once that goes off the road, and now we need another 2-3 days after the fact, and that's where it gets really complicated with people's schedules, venues kicking us out the day before or 2 days before the trial ends, it becomes extremely difficult. That's why all of this is handled, as I discussed at length in the memorandum, prior to that pre-hearing order going out, which sets all of that in motion. And if there's a problem, they can file a motion as they have in the past, and the commission will consider that based on rules of evidence and rules of civil procedure.
Oh, I think you had asked Mr. Fisher to address this, I believe. And I think he was about to speak, I thought.
Yes. Keith?
I think that Mr. Dial is correct. I'm not aware of any other commission anywhere that allows sort of an intermediate stage of the proceedings where, after the decision has been made to proceed to a formal hearing, the judge gets another crack at trying to somehow dissuade them from doing that. The judge will have plenty of opportunities at the formal hearing. In terms of scheduling adequate amounts of time, I mean, that's, I think that, you know, these rules and these statutes do their best to try to accommodate the interests of both sides as an effort to serve the greater public interest in making sure that people are treated fairly, but also making sure that the public has, you know, the kinds of judges that we want. And things happen in these proceedings that nobody anticipates. And we as lawyers know very well that we are notoriously bad at estimating how much time is required to present a case. So you just want to bear that in mind. But I think since what I'm hearing is that Nevada is one of those jurisdictions, and by no means